When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm going to have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast, the podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith and trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star-Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around. Grab your happiest thoughts and use the force to come to Neverland. This is a very special episode. You're going to hear me and Lost Boy Eric join with Dale Wendland from Network 1901, to discuss, of course, Star Wars The Last Jedi. This episode is going to have two halves to it. You're going to hear a very non-spoiler discussion before any of us saw the movie of what we might have expected from the film or what we were hoping to see in the film. Then we're going to take some time in the Neverland story time, and we're going to hear a great storybook of Star Wars The Force Awakens. But after we come back from that story time, we're going to discuss in detail The Last Jedi, what we thought of it, some of the nature of good and evil, the balance of the Force. We get some really great discussions, which is really why I wanted to have Dale on the show. You got to check out his YouTube channel as well. He loves discussing stuff on Star Wars. He likes to think things. He likes to tick off some of the Star Wars fans. But I knew he would be fun to talk to. We had a great time. We probably could have talked a lot longer than we did. But it's all coming up on this episode, so... You know, without taking any time of further ado for any news, or even though, yeah, there was a Ready Player One trailer, I even saw a short tease for a Miles Morales animated Spider-Man straight-to-DVD movie, which the animation looks awful. But instead of really taking time to discuss that, let's just dive right in to our discussion of Star Wars The Last Jedi with myself, Lost Boy Eric, which, by the way, I'm your host, the Spider-Pan Jeremy, and we're, of course, joined by Dale Wendland from Network 1901.
To Disney and beyond.
All right, so we're actually recording this before we see Star Wars The Last Jedi. That way we can get a perspective of what we think we might see, what we're kind of thinking, any potential theories out there. And if we're going to talk about theories, we got to have our old buddy Dale Wendland from Network 1901, because he loves to think about Star Wars.
I do, and I love making up new Star Wars theories all the time, exactly. No matter how many fans get mad at them.
And usually they're at least interesting, so, you know,
yeah,
it's always fun.
It's just thought exercises, you know, Josh in my last video, Josh from the network was like, you know, you should be more confident. You don't have to explain to everybody that you just like to theory craft and that, like, you don't like, it's not serious. It's not for real. And I was like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I do need to say that for people, because I think because when you're presenting something, you want to say it matter of a fact, right? Like, you want to be like, so you don't need to always be like, I think, and maybe. But I felt like I should preface it, because I sometimes speak in such strong language that I think people just think that I'm like, yes, this is happening. They're, you know. Because my recent one, like Dragon Ball super fans were got really mad on these Facebook groups because I said that Rey and Kylo are going to go Super Saiyan Jedi, and I have like this video about it, and it's one of those things where it's like all I do is connect the imagery together of what we're seeing in the trailer and what we know of the Force and I come up with this like idea of the Force well and all that stuff, and how the reason why they're the strongest is because there's no Jedi or Sith or anything. So
they're like pulling all of the Force between the two of them.
Yeah, any sort of like internal energy usually has like it still needs to be channeled, right? You're still channeling the Force, and so it has to be tapped from somewhere. It has to come from somewhere. So now that there are no Jedi and now that there are no Sith, these last Jedi are able to tap from the Force well, as I call it. And I just call anybody who uses the Force Jedi, so just relax. Yeah. Okay. Anybody who's getting mad about Kylo not being a Sith, I know.
Yeah. He's one of the Knights of Ren.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying there's a chance that they could go above 9,000.
Exactly. And I see it. That's exactly right. And that's what I said too, right? Like, their power level is going to be well above 9,000. And I don't know. I just recommend, just as my shameless plug, go check out the video and leave a comment and your opinion down, because I think I put the imagery pretty good there.
Yeah. Well, one thing, though, that you leave out is Kylo Ren is not the only one of the Knights of Ren. And we get to briefly see them a little bit in The Force Awakens during the vision that Rey has. You do see there are others standing with him. So are they also Force-sensitive? How about Snoke? He could be Force-sensitive. We don't know.
Well, I think the cool thing about this world is showing that there's people with Force-sensitivity that aren't Jedi.
Right.
And so you get that with Poe Dameron. Like, he's clearly Force-sensitive. Not only is there source material saying that he grew up tending a Force tree that Luke gave his mom. The way he flies is... TIE Fighter obviously shows he's Force sensitive, right? Like,
even his X-Wing is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Only him and little Annie could fly that well. So, you know, I think they kind of point to that as well, right? Like, you know, you have Maz Kanata as well, another example of someone who uses the Force but isn't a Jedi and stuff. And so there's no reason why these Knights of Ren can't just be like really crazy rad dudes who can at least defend against lightsabers and deflect them and hold their own, but they might not be, you know, doing Force chokes and things like that, you know.
They might not have command of the Force, even if it is sort of with them, like Maz Kanata, or even... There at the beginning of The Force Awakens, that entire village is supposed to have been like the resurgence of a religion of the Force. I can't remember the character's name, though, who was an old friend of Leia's, you know, who has the part Santa. Of the map. Yeah. You know, he's clearly understanding the Force, but he has no control of the Force. So definitely this level.
Well, let's not forget, in Rogue One, we learned about the Guardians of the Wills.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Clearly Force sensitive.
Yeah.
To some degree, the Force is somehow with them, but they don't necessarily seem to have command over it to where they can use it in the typical Jedi sense. But there's definitely a connection.
Well, they're one with the Force, and the Force is with them.
Yeah,
yeah. I think I heard that before. it's one of those things too, where you're now giving a Star Wars explanation to why there are heroes. And why we have this fantasy world in these fantasy settings, but it's because the Force is in everything and it affects us, it's around us, it envelops us,
it binds so well together.
Yeah, exactly. So you got your Han Solos who are, you know, and your Lukes, and you've got your Reys, and you've got your Poes and your Finns. Like, we know Finn, there's something within Finn, like it like it almost the Force undid his brainwashing, because why else do you pay so much attention to Kylo Ren noticing him? You know, above anything else, Kylo Ren noticing him was huge. To notice him, to remember what stormtrooper he was, to know that something happened to him, right? That's what the cool thing about it is that it's showing us all this stuff, and you know, and it's nice to see Star Wars show stuff.
Yeah, and Kylo Ren definitely has some abilities with mind reading and can sense more than just feelings. Like we got in like the original trilogy, you could sense the presence and stuff like that, and there was like feeling. But Kylo Ren can definitely get in your head, and he knew, he could sense everything from Finn of knowing, well, this guy has broken out of his brain control. And, you know, he definitely has that good rapport, and when he really pours it on, he can really dig into your mind and get into some stuff, which there's usually like a specialty apparently within Force users. Like Rey seems to be one of the type that can sense things around with an object, as we see her with the lightsaber.
She has, weirdly enough, Anakin's abilities.
Yes, also being able to repair things and, you know, knowing all that kind of thing, which, you know, seems might be related.
And pilot things that she shouldn't be able to pilot. There's no way she'd been able to fly the Millennium Falcon the way she did. Visions.
Yeah.
Visions are also Anakin's. Anakin used to get visions as well. So,
As did Luke.
But his visions were, he had to be he had to be somewhere special for his visions, didn't he?
It seemed mainly that.
So he didn't have them on his own, which is like a slightly different power. Well, he had to have them in Dagobah, didn't he?
Right.
Well,
right.
I don't know if it's necessarily on Dagobah, but he learned to be more mindful and more focused. But he was very still unfocused. He's very reckless. That's why I don't think he really got good at the visions. Because, you know, his recklessness, and so I have a feeling his recklessness we might see some of that carry over into how things have deteriorated for him when he tried to train Jedi on his own. His recklessness might have been part of the problem.
Well, and to be fair, he's had about 6 hours on a Millennium Falcon of training, plus the time he spent with Yoda on Dagobah, right?
So, when it's hard to really calculate how much time he was there with Yoda.
Like 2 months and 6 hours worth of
training. I'm still waiting for that standalone story where Ahsoka comes and trains him.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, because you could fit it in there, because why wouldn't you?
That would be so awesome. That would be awesome.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I like that.
Somebody make it happen. I'm totally in for this idea.
One of the cool things about the last Jedi trailer, in the trailer at least, what I see, and that whole drawing to, which is obviously some sort of school, probably, and the Knights of Ren and Luke, it's on fire in the Knights of Ren there. Mm-hmm. And I think, to be honest, I feel like that's what we'll see when we see like Kylo Ren's Sith rage. We'll see what the destruction he was able to cause. And the ruin he was able to cause, because he'll need to have brought that out of himself to defeat Luke.
Yeah.
And that's where Rey is going to be like, oh, well, I want that too. I need to be able to go like Sith rage as well if I'm going to be able to defeat Kylo Ren. And that's kind of where that all kind of came from for the Super Saiyan thing, right? Because it's like, but it's true. Like, that's where it all kind of comes from, right? You get the physical transformation. Which is the eyes, at least for Anakin, it was.
Yeah.
So you get physical transformation. You're obviously seeing the Force displayed through external energy now, more so. You know, it's more of like it's kind of like this, like with Luke training with Yoda, but it's more like the power is surging around her, and. And that imagery obviously draws to Dragon Ball as well, and these stories take so much from Japanese storytelling and anime and things like that,
and samurai helmets.
it makes sense. And if you want to shock American audiences nowadays, just do Japanese story tropes. People will be like, whoa, that was the most original thing I've ever saw. Like, the hero went with the bad guy, and you're like, yeah, no, that happens all the time. In Naruto, Sasuke does it with Orochimaru, and Gohan did it with Piccolo. And so these things happen, and it's so cool. And so that's kind of more what my connection is it's more about this kind of storytelling that I see in this obsession I have with anime story, Japanese storytelling.
Well, of course, that all does go back to, you know, some of George Lucas's inspiration, like The Hidden Fortress with A New Hope.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I'm not a madman. I just see these connections, and I figure if I was going to write it, that's what I would do.
Yeah, which is kind of what we're doing with the speculation here, because I still speculate, although I have somebody, someone has told me in some of the newer books that they seem to have indicated that Ben Solo was an only child, but I still think there's definitely a connection between Kylo Ren and Rey, and whether they're brother and sister or their cousins, I'm not entirely certain. I do think that perhaps when Kylo
Ren...
She's
his aunt.
She's his aunt?
What? Yeah. Yeah, because... And so my reason why I think that she's his aunt is because if Snoke... if Snoke used the same method that, say, Darth Plagueis or... potentially Darth Sidious used in creating Anakin in Shmi, right? Because we don't know who Anakin's dad is, but he was created with the Force, and the only person we know who knows how to do that is Darth Plagueis. So what I think is that Rey was an attempt to recreate Anakin. That's why she has Anakin's same Force abilities. And so technically... that the user of that method would be, say, Darth Plagueis of Anakin, and then Darth Plagueis for Rey, just for sake of argument. Doesn't really matter who does it. That would technically make him the father, which would make Luke and Rey actually brother and sister.
Which would be weird.
But well, it's only weird if they start kissing.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like Luke hasn't been happy before.
We've never seen a man have like really young kids and be super old and have like another family already. Like, you know,
weird things happen in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, why not?
So, well, yeah, but there's definitely somewhere connected. And I did take note here watching The Force Awakens here just a little bit ago that, I mean, there's definitely a moment when there's a girl mentioned being on Jakku that Kylo Ren is upset by that. And, you know, he pulls the guy over to him. Yeah. He knows something about this. And
he's worried about a girl in particular.
Yes.
That's the thing.
He knows something. And I also take note
about a girl.
When they're on the Millennium Falcon and they're going to Dandoran, or how do you say that? Dandoran? I don't know. But when they're going in and she says, I've never known there was this much green in the galaxy. There's like a remorse in Han Solo's eyes if he knows somehow it's his fault she's never seen the green, which makes me think he knows that's his daughter, but he really can't say anything because they hid her away. Luke did something to wipe her memories of everything to protect her from her brother, but her brother still had an idea that she was on Jakku. So that's still a possibility.
And also,
sure,
you know,
does that explain? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say also when... Rey returns back to the Resistance base. Who's the first person she sees? It's Leia.
Uh-huh.
And what does Leia do? She gives her a hug.
Yeah. Well,
how does Leia know Rey?
Mm-hmm. I think she knows that's her daughter because they even kind of look alike.
Obviously, they know, you know, that they were going to go rescue her, but you know, what's the connection there?
They had never actually had met each other, had they? Like, this is the first time they see each other in the film.
The connection, I guess, could be... Well, yeah, I don't know. The only reason why I have a tough time with this, and so maybe it will explain it, but I hear what you're saying, and it does make sense that could be, you know, they have a kid who's 10 years older than their kid or 8 years older than their kid. He's now a psycho murderer. So you put you're like, oh, let's hide our young kid. I get it. The only thing, though, is that then why is the Millennium Falcon there? And why didn't Han Solo know to look for it? And I guess you could say he was avoiding it because he knew his daughter was there. But that seems unlikely. If anything, you would probably like just want to go see her and you could see her secretly if you wanted to, especially if you're, you know, no one's following you and your wife aren't together.
Perhaps which I guess just maybe simply the will of the Force to have his ship on that planet with his daughter, with him not even knowing it, because it got stolen from him from one person, and another person stole it, and another person stole it, and eventually it lands on Jakku with the daughter, because it's the will of the Force.
We only know that, so the whole we stole the Millennium Falcon, we only know that story from because of Rey. And so we believe her because of she knows who the last person who had it was.
Yeah.
And she, right? And so that gives her validity in her story. But there's nothing to say that the person who brought Rey to Jakku didn't give the Millennium Falcon as payment to keep Rey safe.
That's interesting.
Well, that it would explain its presence being there more than anything. And if you were trying to hide from a psycho murderer who could go like Super Saiyan, wouldn't you grab the fastest ship in the galaxy?
Yeah.
the one that people can't detect. That undetectable fast ship. Yeah, I'd go steal that one. And then no one would find me. Because Luke Skywalker. So my whole thing is Luke Skywalker took it to save Rey, left it there as payment, and then peaced out. And that's why no one could find him, right? It's just like they couldn't find two things, the Millennium Falcon and Luke Skywalker. And they are connected to Rey somehow, right? That's how you get Luke away from the situation that he was in. Like, why wouldn't they hunt down Luke? Why aren't they trying to kill Luke? Why is there this mystery of where he's going? He tried to hide his tracks. So he went to a planet that no one thinks about, gave payment to this thing. There's a story that it got stolen from somebody who got stolen from somebody. He could have stole it from the person who stole it the first time. We don't know. He's a Jedi.
Yeah.
And that's how you get the Millennium Falcon there. That's how it's connected to Rey. You know, just because Luke saves her doesn't mean that's his daughter. He just saved this Force-sensitive girl. Could be anybody.
Yeah, could be his niece. And I've also found interesting...
Could be Obi-Wan's granddaughter.
Not likely.
or his aunt.
but I noticed something this time. Like when Kylo Ren is trying to get into her mind, he says, "You've imagined water, an ocean with an island," which sounds exactly like where Luke has been hiding out on an island on this ocean.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, she knows about this, either through a vision or she's been there with Luke.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see the forest tree there?
I hope we do. I really do. I don't know how if they can tie the Mortis trilogy into this. Although you'd really have to try to explain it though if you go too far for anyone who didn't bother to watch the Clone Wars series. But there's a possibility of a semblance of that coming up in this movie. You know, because you could have Kylo Ren being the new epitome of the dark side, while Rey is the new epitome of the light side, and a brother and sister that were in the part of the Mortis trilogy, and they together bring balance to the Force. Because it almost would seem like. You know, you've got the Resistance and the First Order, but it seems like there might be something more and deeper going on with the Force that is a whole other story going on here. Because this is more the Force shot.
Yeah, and you've had introduced
Kylo putting his hand out to Rey, and that says something. Something's going on, and maybe the two of them together actually have to do something that will save the galaxy in a completely way we'd not expect.
Well, in Rebels, you introduced the Bendu, right? Like, so you are trying to show that the Force is everywhere, and it's more complicated than we've ever imagined. That's like everything they've ever been doing in this new Star Wars canon is like the Force is crazy and can do anything, and anybody has it, and like there's these neutral creatures, and like they only care about the neutrality of the Force, and it really makes you think, how stupid are Jedi? Like, they probably should have went to normal school, too, to, like, not read a prophecy that says that the Chosen One will bring balance to the Force and not be like, wait a minute, the balance is imbalanced on the light side, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I always thought that's like
arrogance.
It's like, in order to bring balance, you have to have the dark side come up, but unfortunately he overdid it to where the dark side was now ruling the galaxy, so the lights had to come back, and... It's back and forth, and so I think this could be the beginning of where they do have to strike a balance somewhere at the beginning of this, and so that might be what maybe Luke sort of understands this, and that's why he says it's time for the Jedi to end, which we definitely can confirm, because Rian Johnson did say that he meant the last Jedi to be Luke, and in fact even in The Force Awakens in the opening crawl it mentions Luke Skywalker, the last Jedi, And they even refer to him and say, we must destroy the last Jedi when we find Luke. It's like, oh.
So who's the first Jedi then?
That would be interesting because, you know, Luke was supposed to have been looking for the first Jedi temple. Maybe we'll learn that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I also think that little interesting side thing, I think we talked about it on your show last time, maybe, because of the forest tree and everything, on the island or somewhere on the island, we're going to have stronger access to force ghosts. And Rey might be able to get a little Avatar the Last Airbender training happening. And she trains from past Jedis.
Qui-Gon,
Obi-Wan, Yoda, Anakin. And that's why you've seen Hayden Christensen being mentioned in the news and stuff like that, and kind of coming up and doing small interviews and things and kind of being talked about, and people like, oh, he wasn't he nice though, guys? And because of the changes in the DVD, Hayden Christensen is the Force Ghost version, so you would need him to have a Force Ghost help give advice and train to Rey. And I feel like that part of that too is going to lead to Kylo Ren's jealousy arc. Where he's going to be jealous that Anakin appeared to her and didn't appear to him.
Yeah.
And that Snoke is interested in her, getting her on their side. And like, well, why not just me, Daddy? Am I not enough?
Well, and the interesting thing,
that's going to play to the jealousy arc. And then I kind of think that Kylo Ren's going to try to manipulate her, but not for his own purposes because he's jealous.
Yeah. Actually, some of the theories that I was talking to some people on Facebook, and I created a Google document and I said, hey, write down some of the stuff that you've noticed like in the books. And they have noted on here that it seemed almost like Kylo Ren seems to think he hears from his grandfather, and he talks to Darth Vader's helmet, which who knows how he managed to get that. And apparently those ashes there that you see him drop his own helmet in are Vader's ashes. And so he tries to commune with Darth Vader, but yet he's not actually able to do it.
Yes, that's where, and I think that's where you'll get that jealousy part of the beginning. Because Kylo Ren doesn't have jealousy yet.
Yeah, but
he just has anger.
What if Snoke has been actually using that and been kind of helping as Snoke has seduced him to the dark side? Maybe Snoke has been speaking to him, pretending to be Darth Vader, so maybe he's been hearing
all
Snoke's
voice. Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Mm-hmm. But that's actually what somebody wrote on here, and I was like, well, that's an interesting thought.
That's super funny.
So,
you know, I do want to say one great thing about Anakin, if he is in fact a Force ghost in this. Great thing about him being on an island, we know already that the sand is not going to bother him.
Maybe the jagged rocks, though, might be rough. Okay. Any other things we want to dive into before we come back after we see the movie? Any overall theories, something the trailer has shown you that makes you think of something?
I can't think of anything. I've just got my hopes. I hope that there's still a glimmer of the rebel hero Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
that's there. I of course, 30 years have passed in this timeline. We don't know what all Luke has been doing. We don't know how powerful he's become. But you know what? I think there's going to be a lot of disappointment out there if, you know, we don't recognize some part of Luke.
Yeah. He's somehow still got to be our hero from the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to come back. You know, Rey can bring him back to, you know, get him back into things. The other interesting question that they've sort of brought up in the trailer, they almost make it look like one of Kylo Ren's missions in life is to now kill his mother so he can totally be free from his family. And they almost make it set up to where it looks like he's going to blow up the ship she's on. And that would be a convenient way to deal with the fact that you no longer have Carrie Fisher around. Do you think they'll actually do that?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I guess they're probably prepping us for it. Like, because they didn't want people to be too shocked when it happened in the movie, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've my personal theory has been, as far as our legacy characters have gone, The Force Awakens was about Han Solo. The Last Jedi is about Luke Skywalker. And the plan was for episode 9 to be about Leia. And, you know, I would hate to think that they're just going to destroy her ship as a way to remove her from the saga. I think, you know, certainly we can't move forward without Carrie Fisher, but it's going to be interesting. I don't think that that's, I don't think this is going to end the way you think it will.
I've heard that before too.
Yeah. Well, one thing is definite. I'm very interested to see. It looks like Finn is going to be doing some undercover work inside the First Order, culminating in a big fight with Captain Phasma. I'm very excited to see how that's going to play out. Looks like Poe Dameron has a mission of his own where he thinks he can end the First Order. So there seems to be multiple stories all going to come together in this film. So I'm very excited to see how they're all come together.
And I want to see how Rose fits into all of this.
Yeah, we don't know much about her at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty, I think that, I don't know if they'll spend too much time on their on her backstory. I think there's a lot of movie to fill in here already.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, you know, you're just going to have like a, geez, our chop person working
mechanic.
There. Yeah, like, you know, like... She's got it on lockdown. You need her to help you be spy-y, you know.
Yep, but we've got some great, like, you know, what could potentially be some great new characters, you know, with her, with Vice Admiral Holdo, and with DJ.
And Porgs.
Yeah. And the Porgs.
And Crystal Foxes for some reasons.
Oh, those are cool looking.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of cool looking things. I don't really, I don't know. I like Porgs and things. They're like, whatever, it's cute and stuff. I'm not hating on Porgs. I just don't, I don't know. I try not to connect to things before. I don't even know. Who knows if I like Porgs or not.
But since we've gone on like a half an hour here, we'll take a quick break and listen to the storybook of The Force Awakens. And when you hear us again, be prepared for potential spoilers, because we're going to talk about what we thought about The Last Jedi.
This is your Neverland story time. You can listen along with your MP3 device. You will know it is time to listen when you hear the chime like this. Let's begin now.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there was a scavenger, a soldier, and a lost droid. This is the story of Star Wars, The Force Awakens. You can read along with me in your book. You'll know it's time to turn the page when you hear this sound. Let's begin now. Poe Dameron was on a mission. The Resistance had sent the pilot and his trusty droid, BB-8, to recover a map that would help the group find Luke Skywalker. Luke was a powerful Jedi Knight, known for defeating the evil Empire. But Luke had disappeared many years before. A new enemy, the First Order, threatened to destroy peace in the galaxy, and the Resistance needed Luke once more. Poe and BB-8's mission took them to a small village on the sandy planet of Jakku. There, Lor San Tekka, an old friend of Luke's, gave the map to Poe. But moments later, First Order stormtroopers attack the village.
On my command, fire.
Poe and BB-8 fled to their ship, but it was quickly destroyed by the stormtroopers. Poe knew he had to get the map to safety. He gave it to BB-8 and ran back to help Lor. But someone else had reached the old man first, Kylo Ren. A vicious warrior for the First Order held Lor captive.
You know what I've come for.
Poe fired at Kylo, but it was no use. Kylo used the Force to deflect Poe's blasts and quickly captured the Resistance pilot. Kylo, Poe, and the stormtroopers returned to the First Order Star Destroyer orbiting Jakku. The soldiers went back to their barracks, all except one stormtrooper named FN-2187. That battle had been his first, and he hoped it would be his last. He felt terrible about the attack and had only pretended to fire his blaster at the villagers on Jakku. Suddenly, the stormtrooper heard a voice behind him.
FN-2187, submit your blaster for inspection.
It was his commanding officer, Captain Phasma. She suspected that FN-2187 had failed to fire on anyone in the village, but she wanted to prove it. FN-2187 was ready to leave the First Order, but he'd need a pilot to help him escape. Fortunately, he knew just where to find one. Meanwhile, on Jakku, a scavenger named Rey was searching through a crashed starship for spare parts. She was looking for anything she could use or trade for food nearby at Nima Outpost. It was a hard life, but it was the only one Rey had ever known. All that changed, however, when she came across a little round droid. The droid was lost and refused to leave her side. On board the Star Destroyer, FN-2187 had freed Poe, but they still needed to get off the ship. The trooper asked the pilot if he could fly a Special Forces TIE fighter.
I can fly anything.
Together, FN-2187 and Poe stole one of the enemy ships and escaped into space.
I always wanted to fly one of these things.
I'm Poe, Poe Dameron.
Poe asked if he could call the soldier Finn instead, and the former stormtrooper happily agreed. Poe told Finn that they needed to head back to Jakku and find his droid BB-8, but Finn protested.
We go back to Jakku, we die.
But there was no time to argue. A blast from the Star Destroyer suddenly rocked their ship. Poe looked over at Finn in the gunner's seat.
Now would be a good time to start shooting.
But it was too late. Alarms rang as their TIE fighter plummeted toward the sandy planet below. Finn managed to eject before the ship hit the ground. But the only sign of Poe was his jacket. Finn grabbed the jacket and shed his stormtrooper armor before heading across the hot desert. He needed to find help. After wandering for hours, Finn finally found an outpost. He was shocked when he saw the droid Poe had described. BB-8 was still at Rey's side. Finn did his best to tell Rey everything about BB-8's mission for the Resistance, but it was a complicated story.
Listen, I've had a pretty messed up day.
And the day was about to get worse. A team of stormtroopers was searching the outpost for the lost droid. Finn, Rey, and BB-8 looked for somewhere to hide, but the stormtroopers had already spotted them. Rey knew they couldn't escape the stormtroopers on foot, but they might be able to in a ship. She led them toward the shipyard, and they hopped aboard an old Carillion light freighter that hadn't been flown in years. Rey fired up the engines and took off, while Finn hurried to the gunner's seat. Two TIE fighters flew down and fired on them. Finn took aim and fired back. Rey heard his blaster bolt strike a direct hit.
Nice job!
But Finn saw that the TIE fighters were still close behind them.
We need cover!
Rey banked hard and turned the ship toward the fields of wreckage out in the desert. Finn shot down one of the TIEs. Then Rey flew right through the inside of a crashed Star Destroyer, catching the other TIE off guard. Finn fired and the enemy ship exploded in a shower of sparks. Rey quickly flew into space, breathing a sigh of relief. Now they could get BB-8 and the map back to the Resistance. But even though they had escaped the First Order, there were other dangers lurking. As Rey and Finn were planning what to do next, their ship suddenly lost power.
Someone's locked onto us. All controls have been overridden.
A massive cargo hauler loomed above their ship, pulling them into its docking bay. Finn, Rey, and BB-8 hid, listening as two strangers boarded the ship. The newcomers immediately began looking through the ship and within moments found the trio's hiding place. To Finn and Rey's surprise, the two figures were an old man and a Wookiee.
Chewie, we're home.
The man introduced himself as Han Solo and explained that the ship, the Millennium Falcon, was his. Rey recognized his name at once. Han was one of the heroes who had helped Luke Skywalker defeat the Empire. Since that time, Han and Chewbacca had been involved in some decidedly less heroic jobs. Even as Han was talking to Rey and Finn, two rival gangs boarded the cargo ship and demanded payment for one of Han's failed missions. Han, Chewie, and their three new friends escaped to the Millennium Falcon and jumped to light speed.
Hang on back there!
Safe again for the moment, Rey explained that BB-8 had a map that would help lead the Resistance to Luke Skywalker.
This droid has to get to the Resistance base as soon as possible.
Then BB-8 projected the map he had been protecting. Upon hearing the name of his old friend, Han agreed to help. Han thought his friend Maz might be able to help too. They flew to the lush planet of Takodana, where Maz's castle provided refuge for every human and alien in that corner of the galaxy. Maz sized each of them up, finally turning to Rey. The short alien asked about Rey's past and gazed up at her with big, questioning eyes. Rey shifted uncomfortably.
I'm no one. I'm just a scavenger.
Maz disagreed. She suggested that Rey was in tune with the Force, but the girl didn't believe her. Rey fled the castle. She wanted to find somewhere she could be alone. But even Maz's castle wasn't safe from the First Order. A spy among Maz's guests had called down troops to attack. Han, Chewie, and Finn did their best to fight off the First Order stormtroopers. Maz had given Finn a lightsaber, which he used to clear his way through the battle. He had to find Rey. It was too late, though. Kylo Ren had found Rey first. She fired at him, but her blaster was no match for Kylo's lightsaber. Kylo captured her and took her back to his shuttle. Han, Finn, and the others were able to escape only after a squad of Resistance ships appeared in the sky. They had finally been able to track down BB-8's homing signal and had arrived to help. The Resistance forces, led by General Leia Organa, escorted the Millennium Falcon safely back to their base. Once there, Finn was surprised to see a familiar face, Poe Dameron's. The pilot had survived the crash on Jakku and was once again flying for the Resistance. BB-8 beeped with joy as he reunited with Poe. The Resistance had learned that the First Order completed work on a massive weapon called the Star Killer that could destroy entire star systems. The First Order had already used the planet-sized weapon to obliterate the New Republic capital. The Resistance was the only force left to stop the evil group. After the Battle of Takodana, Kylo took Rey to the frozen planet that housed the Star Killer. There, he questioned her, trying to learn any information she might be hiding.
Is it true? You're just a scavenger.
Rey was surprised to hear the echo of her own words in Kylo's question. As she looked into the villain's eyes, she sensed a connection between them. It was almost as if she could see into his mind. Suddenly, Rey was flooded with images and emotions. She could see Kylo's anger and hurt and fear. Kylo pulled back. He couldn't believe it. Was she using the Force? One thing was clear. Rey was more than just a scavenger. Meanwhile, the Resistance was planning its attack on the Starkiller base. Han, Chewie, and Finn would land on the enemy base and take down its shields from the inside. Then, Poe and his team of pilots could fly in and destroy the crucial part of the weapon that kept it from overheating. The Starkiller would explode in a massive power overload. Finn also hoped he could find Rey and rescue her from Kylo Ren. Poe wished Finn luck, then hopped into his X-Wing and took off.
All teams, altitude confirmed. Hold for jump to light speed on my go.
Alone in her cell, Rey was still recovering from the strange experience of looking into Kylo's mind. She felt different and powerful. She wondered if she could do it again. Rey called to the guard in her cell and ordered him to remove her restraints. To her surprise, he did. Rey ran from the cell and quietly scaled the walls of the base, searching for a way to escape. Han, Chewie, and Finn had just landed on the Starkiller base. They could see a great beam extending into the sky, drawing in power from a nearby star. Once this star was extinguished, the weapon would be ready to fire. They had to destroy the Starkiller before that happened. They fought their way deep into the Starkiller base. First Order forces were everywhere, and time was running out. Finn spotted Captain Phasma. His old commander would know exactly how to get to the shields. Chewie grabbed the unsuspecting captain. When Phasma saw Finn, she tried to call him by his old identification code. Finn corrected her.
The name's Finn, and I'm in charge now.
Phasma had no choice. She led him to the shield's controls and disabled them. Poe and his pilots circled high above the Starkiller base.
Red Squad, Blue Squad, take my lead.
The First Order's fleet was firing at them. Poe dodged blast after blast, taking his squad around for another attack run. Then he received the message he had been waiting for. The Starkiller shields were down. Poe smiled.
All right, let's light it up!
But as the X-Wings fired, the Resistance pilots discovered that there was still a dense wall between them and the weapon's cooling device. From the Starkiller base, Finn saw the X-Wings attacking. He realized they had to take the wall down. But as soon as they did, it would be only a matter of time until the base exploded. Fortunately, Rey ran right into them. Together, Han, Chewie, Finn, and Rey sprinted toward the cooling device. Han and Chewie planted explosives, while Rey and Finn kept watch for stormtroopers. But it wasn't stormtroopers who found them. It was Kylo Ren. He was searching the area for resistance forces when Han saw him approaching. Instead of raising his blaster, Han stepped out of the shadows and called out to Kylo. Kylo spun around and looked at Han.
I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
So had Han. Ever since Kylo had fallen to the dark side of the Force, Han had been waiting for his son to return to him. Now, the Starkiller was about to be destroyed, and Han reached out to Kylo one last time, begging him to come home. But Kylo would not listen. He ignited his lightsaber and silenced his father forever. Chewie cried out in horror, but he still had a mission to complete. He managed to set off the explosives, but a squad of stormtroopers separated him from Finn and Rey. Finn and Rey ran through the twisting hallways of the Starkiller base. They felt the planet rock beneath their feet as Poe fired on the weakened cooling device, destroying it once and for all. Now they just had to get back to their ship. But when they reached the edge of the base, Kylo Ren was waiting for them. Finn drew the lightsaber Maz had given him. Kylo sneered.
That weapon is mine.
Come get it.
Finn used every ounce of his training to fight Kylo, but it wasn't enough. Only someone with a strong connection to the Force could defeat such a warrior. With a mighty blow, Kylo knocked Finn to the ground, wounding him. Kylo used the Force to pull Finn's lightsaber from his grip. The weapon flew toward Kylo and then sped right past him and into Rey's waiting hand. She ignited the weapon and charged at Kylo. Rey's blue lightsaber clashed against the burning red of Kylo's. Anger filled her as she struck blow after blow against the man who had hurt her friends. She could feel the Force within her, surging with power. Kylo hit the ground as Rey's lightsaber cut across his face. Rey realized she could end everything. She could destroy Kylo for good. Suddenly, the Starkiller base rumbled beneath their feet. A great gulf opened between them as the planet began to tear itself apart. Kylo was beyond her reach, but she had defeated him for now. Rey knelt beside Finn as stormtroopers arrived and helped the injured Kylo to a shuttle. Chewie picked up Rey and Finn in the Falcon. Rey took the pilot seat at the Wookiee's side, and together they set course for the Resistance base. Behind them, the planet collapsed in a burst of light and heat. The Resistance had destroyed the weapon once and for all. Back at the Resistance base, Rey still had a long journey ahead of her. The First Order had been crippled, but not defeated. Kylo and his soldiers would return. The Resistance knew that Rey needed to be taught the ways of the Force, and that only Luke Skywalker could train her. Carrying BB-8's precious map and the lightsaber Maz had given Finn, Rey said goodbye to Leia and boarded the Millennium Falcon alongside Chewbacca and R2-D2. They were off to find the lost Jedi. When the Millennium Falcon reached Octo, an old man was waiting for Rey. Luke Skywalker was strong in the Force and had sensed her arrival. Rey handed the Jedi Master the lightsaber. It was his, after all. Rey didn't know what the future held, but she was sure that her adventures were only just beginning.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody!
And me!
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time!
Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken!
Oh, good!
Alrighty, so, you have officially been warned, but let me give you the warning again. We are about to review Star Wars The Last Jedi, talk about what we liked about the film, and we're probably going to spoil something for you. So if you have not seen the film yet, pause this episode until you get a chance to go see it. In fact, go out immediately and see it right now. Or skip down to your next episode and come back to it. Either way, don't listen to this if you don't want to possibly be spoiled on anything of The Last Jedi, because there is so much that happens, we're going to mention it. It's going to happen. So, without further ado, welcoming back, of course, Dale and Eric. Now, it's been a few days since our last conversation, and we've all seen this movie, and I bet some of us have seen it more than once.
Who's seen it more than once? I can only wish.
Yeah. No, I've only seen it once as well. Shannon from Network 91 has seen it a couple times. She's going to see it again for a third time. She loves it. I just finished, actually, our Monday episode of the DCC, which is going to be Monday the
18th.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing a full Force Awakens spoiler conversation about it too. So if any of the listeners want to join us over there, that would be great as well.
So you're going to spoil the first Force Awakens and then spoil The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Which, anyone listen to this show, we've just spoiled The Force Awakens because we just played the storybook for you. But by now, I'm figuring everybody has seen it. It's been a couple of years. So, if you haven't seen it by now, then okay, I don't know what you were waiting for. Although I have a stepbrother who hasn't seen it yet, and I'm gonna correct that, but he's not a big Star Wars guy. I need to work on him.
Well, I'll tell you, The Last Jedi definitely does need at least repeat viewings.
Oh, yes. There's so much happening in this movie, and a lot of stuff that I found completely unexpected. Unexpected delight is pretty much what you could call this movie. Stuff you didn't think was going to happen happens, and you're like, this was the coolest idea ever to have this happen. That's pretty much reaction.
Both your feelings are super positive on the movie?
Yes, I really, really enjoy this. I even enjoy the fact that we got to, I think this is the first one of these movies where we got to see this much development in animals on various planets, and they actually had significant roles to play.
That actually had, yes, yeah.
Because the Porgs were just there for comic relief, but, you know, the Crystal Wolves served a role in the story. The Fathiers, I don't know how you pronounce those, actually served a part in the story. That's very unique. I don't think, you know, we've had some animals kind of in the background or whatever in Star Wars films, but this is the first time I think that they were really significant to the story. I was impressed by that. That was a new way to look at things.
I think it was great to have all of these animals. I'm not entirely sure that I needed to know where green milk comes from, but I have to agree. I really, really, really enjoyed this movie. Got a lot of positive vibes. For me personally, I feel that this is the most Star Wars-ish movie since A New Hope.
Wow. Yeah. Or since the original trilogy, because I still love Empire and Return of the Jedi as well, of course.
So, yeah, I like the movie. I think there are some major flaws in it, not from a Star Wars standpoint, but from actual filmmaking standpoint, and it really bothered me, making me concerned about Rian Johnson's ability to direct such a large film. I think that if anyone sitting around in the studios watching the movie didn't think that the Princess Leia scene was awkward and looked strange, I have some concerns.
Because which one?
The
one scenes?
With her floating through space.
I thought that was awesome. I loved it.
You might like the action. Sure, you might like the action. It doesn't look good, though. It looks weird. You could have achieved the exact same thing and just shortened it, made her closer to the door, had her start to move, and then just show her coming in. I didn't need to see her weirdly float rigidly through space. It just looks visually strange. And it just that kind of bothered me. I like the humor in the movie, but I feel like there were some bad jokes that don't work very well. I think the Chrome Dome comment doesn't make sense coming from Finn. I think Finn should be much more emotionally distraught. This is her slaver that he's fighting. This is his slaver that he's fighting. And so like that kind of bothered me. Like I felt like some of the humor didn't work, even though I love the Hux and Poe humor and I love some of the other humor. I think there was a quantity quality issue there. I think it was weird that every bad guy gets like super buffed and then super deflated. Hux is like, oh, Phasma, she's so great, blah, 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 blah. And then it's dead.
That's kind of what Phasma was in the first film, too, though. Yeah. It's like, oh, we were hearing all this buildup for Phasma, and they take her captive pretty quickly. And it was pretty similar. It's like she didn't show up until, you know, the second half of the movie. We finally see her mainly just to fight with Finn. And it was a heck of a good fight, though. The one question I would have on
seven
that,
distinct,
though.
Seven distinct battles, which was crazy, right?
Oh, my
seven
goodness.
Seven completely separate distinct battles, which is...
Yeah, and different stories and going with each one was really cool.
And the X-Wing taking down the Dreadnought was awesome. Just continuing to prove that he's Force-sensitive. you know what? I think good job on us. Previously, we were talking about how the new trilogy leads more towards that everyone, like the Force is everywhere, and it's more about the Force being everywhere. And talk about The Last Jedi really hitting home our comments there, because that's what the whole film is about, is that it doesn't, you know, the Force is everywhere. Everyone has it.
Right. But taking right back to the Phasma thing, though, one thing I'd have to question is you see that Rose fires a shot right into Phasma's armor and just boing, it reflects off. Why wouldn't you put that armor on all of your stormtroopers?
Why do sticks beat up stormtroopers? Why do they even wear armor? These are good
Maybe
questions.
Maybe chrome's expensive.
Yeah. And I wasn't bothered so much by the Chrome Dome because we kind of got to see Finn's turnaround post-brainwashing in the first film. It was like, I'm in charge, Phasma, I'm in charge. Where he's got that, ha-ha, I'm a boss over you now. And so him just, hey, Chrome Dome, just throwing an insult at her in some fashion just seemed to fit his attitude of like, ha-ha, I am a better than you and I'm going to take you down. It fit. It was a little childish, a little goofy, but it worked in its own way.
I loved Yoda. I thought, like, at first I thought he looked weird, but then I realized that the CG was to make him look like Muppet Yoda, which was an awesome decision. Like, at first I was like, why does he look weird? And then it was like, he looks like a Muppet. He looks like a Muppet. That's awesome. That's perfect.
I heard that they actually did use a puppet.
Sweet.
Yeah, and I would believe that because it moved like a puppet. Everything was so awesome. Puppet about it. I didn't know that was coming. That caught me off guard, and I was so happy to see him.
I had a prediction check mark on that one, didn't I? Didn't I say Force Ghosts on the island?
Well, yeah, we were expecting Force Ghosts, but we didn't know who we were going to get. I thought they'd really surprise us and maybe, like, Qui-Gon would show up. Would be kind of cool.
But a Force Ghost that interacted with the physical world is what I specifically said.
Yeah, and that was awesome. Even showing ability to still use the Force while being part of it.
Yeah.
And showing a power we didn't ever see before.
Did the books put themselves in Finn's locker? Or did Luke go and save them before the tree burnt them down?
So it's possible Rey had gotten them out of there and Luke didn't know that Rey had them.
And Yoda didn't know? I don't know. Well,
yeah, who says Yoda would have known? Yoda, as far as we know, never appeared to Rey or never paid attention to Rey so much.
Yeah, but he has an omnipresence about him, you know?
Well, but he's Yoda. He's not God. So he doesn't know everything. He's just very wise.
He could know if some books were in a tree or not.
Yeah, which might be why he had no problem with blowing that tree down. You know, it's just like, the books are God. Rey already knows the books. That's probably why he said that. He probably knew that she got it. That could be, too.
I just really like the characterization that they gave to Yoda in this. He's not the Yoda at the end of the Republic. He is the Yoda, you know, that had been exiled on Dagobah. He's the one who knew that he could poke fun at Luke. And, you know.
So much strong Dagobah imagery, too. You know, super cool. And they did have the Force Tree. So the Force Tree was there. So that's cool.
Yeah. Although they seem to imply that that tree had been on that island for who knows how long, even before, and maybe it was a place for the books.
Yeah.
Like it was part of this ancient thing.
Yeah, which is weird. But we still got a Force Tree, which was kind of cool.
Yeah. We still got a Force Tree. It was very, very cool.
Which makes me really think that the cave that that Luke goes into in Dagobah was also a Force Tree, but
it
like
could
it just,
be.
You know, just more cave-esque, more maybe, you know, more mineral buildup inside of it.
Yeah. And what do you all think of the meaning with Rey's cave experience with seeing the multiple reflections and when she asks to see her parents and she sees herself? I'm taking the meaning that she's not identified by who her parents were, but who she has become on her own. That's kind of the meaning I was getting. What do y'all think?
If she is potentially the actual chosen one, the one that is truly born from the Force, then everyone would be her parents. Well, you know, because we could deduce that Anakin's birth was more manipulated and he wasn't the chosen one particularly, even though he did bring balance to the Force.
That maybe she was an actual weird, rare occurrence that just the Force did on its own.
But Rey brings balance to the Force just as much as Anakin did, literally by being the counter to Kylo Ren, which Snoke talks about.
Right.
But also being the driving force for Luke killing himself and removing all presence of the old order. Yeah, which
the word you're looking for, a sacrifice. Killing yourself sounds like suicide, but no, that was sacrifice for the greater good.
It was pretty much suicide because he could have just gone to the planet instead and not died, but you know,
wouldn't have fulfilled the purpose for what he did there. Because he could have showed up at his X-Wing and just joined the fight, but the way he showed up there, knowing he could be the distraction to let his friends get away, I think that was his purpose. Yeah. And he found his peace. He completed his hero's journey completely to become the full master at the end, to completely vanish and become one with the Force.
Totally.
That was beautifully done. Even with a binary sunset. Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my little Star Wars geek heart was just going off.
It was perfect. It was really good. I like Luke's arc very much, so I really loved it. Very happy with that. I was a little disappointed the Knights of Ren completely fallen off the face of the map. The Praetorian guards were really cool. Oh my god. Oh, Kylo Ren and Rey fighting together. It was
my goodness.
I leaned over. I'm like, I'm nerdgasming.
Yes, totally. Oh. Because, I mean, really, this movie had a lot of elements from The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi all thrown together, except for the twist of Kylo Ren doesn't turn back to the good side. He's like, no, I actually want you to join me, and I thank you for, pretty much like, thank you for helping me get rid of Snoke and all these guys. I'm going to take this throne. I'm now Supreme Commander of the First Order. Join me. Together we can rule the galaxy. Oh, look, Empire again.
Yeah. I do actually think that if if we're saying that The Force Awakens is a reboot of the original trilogy style, that I kind of felt that The Last Jedi was a reboot of the prequel style. And a little so bit. Much like just with the animals and the interaction of the animals and the environment and the casino and the hacker and thing like that, you know, like it was very much prequel-esque in that. And even just the feel, I kind of got more of a shiny feel from a lot of it. I do think there was a bit of a missed opportunity to have some pod racing going on that circuit track, though. Anybody else? Like, as soon as I saw that we're going to, I was like, oh my God, pod racing! Because we all like pod racing. Like, that was, we're not anti-pod racers.
I think that's more of the Hutts really like that, I guess.
There was quite an audience on Tatooine, so.
Right.
That's true.
I also thought it was strange that if the film took place right after The Force Awakens, which it does, how are the First Order in charge of the galaxy all of a sudden? Like,
because they blew out the Republic, and apparently they were more powerful than we ever thought they were.
But
they were able to take military control.
Their base was destroyed as well. They lost, and they don't seem to have another base.
Well, clearly they have a giant dreadnought, more than one. They also have a huge ship where Snoke actually is. So,
The ships, not anymore, but those ships.
Oh, yeah.
Those ships are super cool for sure. Mm-hmm. But you would need to actually control the galaxy. You know what I mean? Like,
military might is really what you need.
No, but you would need at least a dreadnought per ship, like per planet. You know, like
they might have
the First Order is nowhere close to the Empire, and even the Empire had a hard time managing the beginning of A New Hope. They're discussing like, oh, you can't get rid of the leaders from the Senate because we need to be able to leverage the leaders from each planet. And they're like, no, we have fear now, but they don't have fear. They don't have a Star Killer base. They don't have a Death Star. So I don't know how they go from not controlling the galaxy to, yes, the government is gone. Yes, I understand that. But to being in control, I don't know if that's true at all.
I think it's the fear thing again, because really the Republic probably didn't have much of a military force at this point, except for a resistance that was put together when they realized the remnants of the Empire were still around there and created this First Order. So I think there's that dread of seeing the Republic government gone that would drive the fear into the people of what the First Order is capable of. And we even see from Finn in the first film, he's completely terrified of the First Order. He's like, you don't know these people. They're going to wipe us all out. They do have the might. So there is still that fear that they managed to generate. But I do like, this answers the question, because like in the first film, all right, the Death Star is destroyed, but the Empire still knew about the Yavin base. So I love the way that this begins, like, okay, well, the First Order may have just lost their prime weapon, but they still know where the Resistance are based at.
Yeah.
It made sense that, they're going straight there to launch the attack to try to finish the job. I was like, thank you for actually doing something that makes sense, because I still would love to see something that picks up right after the Death Star's destruction, right after they do this medal ceremony. You know the Rebels had to pack their stuff up and get the heck off of there.
Yeah. Did you have any issues with Holdo's acting performance?
I really didn't like her until near the end. I thought maybe she was going to be the one that was allowing the First Order to track them, because she just seemed – I just didn't trust her.
Okay, as a character, sure, you might not like her, but what about the acting performance? Because I kind of just, I don't know, something about the acting, it just, I don't know.
Felt a little phoned in?
Yeah, well.
A little bit, I suppose.
Not phoned in. I would more put it towards, like, Carrie Fisher's acting. Like, Carrie Fisher is doing a very admirable job in her performances, but when you kind of put her next to, like, Harrison Ford and stuff like that, like, it's not quite there, right? She hasn't been acting at that same level that Harrison Ford had been acting for the whole period of time. So in The Force Awakens, there's kind of some awkwardness in her voice or the way she delivers her lines or some of her believability or some of her commitment. It just was weird seeing Laura Dern, really, I guess. It was like too recognizable of a face for, you know, like I think that was unnecessary almost. It was almost a distraction. I don't know.
Well, you could probably say that about Benicio del Toro, but I was still excited to see him in there because I knew he was going to pop up. And when he finally showed up, I was like, there he is.
Okay, so at first I was like, Because he kind of seemed exactly like the Collector, like right for like a brief moment, for a very brief moment when you first meet him, he kind of has the Collector voice on. And if when you rewatch it, just you'll notice that right, like the very, very first moment, the first couple lines, very much a Collector voice. And he has a bit of the stutter. But after that, though, I'm totally fine with his character. I really liked his character.
Yeah, he was very cool. Although Rose
and Finn was so great. Oh. Like they're the ones being they're spreading the spark of the rebellion. I do think it was a little layered on thick with the little stupid kid sweeping, but other than that, I really was actually hoping the
Codebreaker was going to be Lando.
I thought it was going to be Lando too when they said that's so funny. When they said the red flower. I was like, oh, it's gonna be Lando. It's gonna be Lando. Oh my god, it's gonna be Lando, because we know he's a bit of a programmer, because he programmed Lobot, right? I think that was a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah, but it still gave us a good character.
No, because you had the programmer was nobody.
I'm sure he'll be back.
Like it could have been Lando in that moment.
Yeah,
I think that would have tied Lando more into, you know, everything else going on with Canto Bight, knowing that these people that were there, these aliens and everyone, were involved with selling weapons to the First Order. You know, which kind of would. You know, Lando's had his redemptive moment. Do you really want to go put him back and become that shifty?
But you know, they did it with Han Solo. What's
his motivation?
They did it with Han Solo.
Yeah, it went back to being a smuggler, but that's not really like being part of the Empire.
Once the rebellion was done, they went back to doing what they knew how to do.
Yeah, and Lando could have been there not as a war profiteer, but as kind of working underground, like a spy. Yeah, kind of doing his own things to kind of undermine the First Order.
Then Maz Kanata wouldn't have known it was him. You know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't have been her guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, actually, you know what? Lando totally should have been her guy, because Han Solo and Chewie are her guys.
Yeah.
You know, like,
So it would have made sense for Lando, but I like getting new characters.
Sure.
Because I've enjoyed it, because, like, Rose was a brand new character, but by the end, we really loved that character. She was so great.
I do hope there's no love interest, to be honest, just because I hope there's no love interest for anybody. Because I think they've gone two films with no real love interest, except for Finn a bit crushing on Rey. And you did have Rey give a bit of a jealous look, but I think it's really important not to have conflict between women over a man in this film.
I don't know. That wasn't a jealous look. She seemed kind of happy about it, because did you notice the look between her and Poe? Like, when they first kind of meet and introduce, she kind of has that, ooh, he's a nice-looking fella.
A lot of people said that. Well, that's because he's charming, but you can, you know, I'm sure all of our wives think there's other handsome men out there. So
my wife did like the shirtless Kylo Ren moment.
And I like the way that she is like, could you put a shirt on?
I love the link connection between the two of them. I thought that was great.
I
really did think that was going to be where we're going to have that landed connection of them being related. And I'm still holding out hope, because I don't know that Kylo Ren told her the truth. And he says, your parents were just people that sold you for alcohol.
Yeah. Okay. I don't believe him. Thank you. So I'm actually, right after we're done, I'm recording a video about this. Because the way they present, so one of the complaints that people are having on the internet about The Last Jedi, because The Last Jedi is about destroying the establishment and getting rid of the old and bringing in the new. I think that the way they kind of stomped on a lot of plot points that were supposed to carry over from The Force Awakens, like Snoke. like the Knights of Ren, like the lightsaber. To be honest, it kind of actually made me feel like Rian Johnson didn't like The Force Awakens the way he was about a lot of The Force Awakens plot lines. What they did is they were able to mask this reveal that we accept, because it was presented the same way all the other things had been presented that were true, and that is her parents. And it's even on theme to the film. The film is being like, hey, look, there's going to be Force users all around. Like, the balance is that, like, basically everybody's going to have the Force. It's basically the balance of the Force. And anybody can be special. And that's kind of this whole theme. And and that's the that's the perfect way to mask it. Just like in The Arrival, how the film makes you think that the story is being told linear through filmmaking. It's tricking you through the film. I think they're doing the same thing with this. Rian Johnson has made great films before. I do think this film was a little bit too big for him, but and so I feel like that one in particular is the one that we've accepted it, and because all the characters accepted it, and it was presented in the same way all the other plots were presented or completed. But that's how you get the best reveal, is to make us think the answer's already been given. Otherwise, there will be no twists in the final movie, which is going to not be true. You know what I mean?
I'm like, sure, because there were so many twists in this one. I'm sure J.J. Abrams can twist us even more to surprise us. Because really, this was just like how The Empire Strikes Back was character development, where we learned so much more about the characters. And Return of the Jedi is like the summation of taking all that stuff we learned about him and then taking it to fruition. This, I feel like we developed characters. We learned so much more about Kylo Ren, and we saw him really in his own journey, truly becoming the new Darth Vader that Snoke wanted him to become. But in order to do it, he had to take out Snoke and take command of everything himself and really unleash.
You gotta love Luke trying to be like, seem like he, like, oh, it was just a bad moment. You know, I just was gonna murder this kid I've been teaching this whole time, and it was just a bad second. It's like, you still stood him with a lightsaber turned on. Yeah. Like, no wonder he's mad.
You had that brief moment of thinking, I
should murder this person.
That's that thing where they had the, you know, they always ask, well, if you could go back in time and murder Hitler as a child before he did anything, would you do it? He was in that same thing. He saw what Kylo Ren was going to become. And for that moment, he thought, I could stop this right now,
murder Hitler.
But I can't just murder him. He has that second thought, but it's too late. By the time he has a second thought, Kylo sees him and
Well, and also too, that's a tough one with that question, right? Because those thought exercises, those are tough. And so it's funny that we do kind of, you do still relate to Luke in that moment. You're like, oh, that does, but really we shouldn't. Cause like none of us have been in that situation. Like none of us have like been looming over like our child being like, well, if I just murder him, I'm going to avoid a lot of. It's still pretty, you're still pretty much a jerk there, Luke. You're still. But it makes sense that, that being the truth is a big part of what's eating him up inside. I really, truly wish he had told the truth, to be honest. That means he was still hiding it a lot.
Well, I think what we're seeing here in that hero's journey, this is the part where you doubt everything you were ever taught.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
That's exactly where Luke is in most of this thing. He has now thrown away what he's taught. He has to rediscover the truth of it completely on his own and really become the master after he's walked away from that doubt area that you walk into. And that's like even a part of growing up sometimes, where you have to question everything that you were taught to see if it really holds true. And he really goes through that journey. Because he has everything to doubt and he fails and stuff like that. It was great.
Why did he leave a map? If it's like, if you ever need help, I'm going to use a map that only a force sensitive person is going to be able to find. And like R2 will wake up at a certain time if you need me. And then they do it. And he's like, no, like, I guess when he left, he had a different intention. And now that he's been there dwelling, he's changed his mind.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. They haven't explained that map, how it came to exist. It seemed like it was a plot device, really, in the Force Awakens that they didn't think they'd have to explain. But now it seems like Luke really didn't want to be found. So how did this map come into existence? That is a good question.
Yeah.
Maybe J.J. Abrams will explain it, or maybe we won't care so much by then, because I'm not that fussed about it, but it is an interesting question.
Yeah. Well, I think the most interesting thing that this movie has left us with is that we literally have no idea what's about to happen next now.
Exactly. No. I love that, because we don't even really understand where did Snoke come from. Because
I don't even see theories that we could generate.
Yeah, Snoke was like so powerful that I want to know, who was he really? Was he really Plagueis? Because he does have that all those scars and torn up, and he was so powerful. He was scary, and he reminded me of Palpatine. In fact, there was a little bit of Palpatine's music came in.
Yeah.
And
he even made me feel like he was so like they made me feel like he was so clever. Like his force ability was knowing, you know, was basically being infallible,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's what he's even saying that went right before he dies. It's like his force ability is just to know everybody's motives.
Almost except like for not understanding what Kylo Ren's intention
like,
was.
But
hubris.
Well, no, that's the whole thing, right? Like that theme comes up every time with every bad guy, right?
Yeah.
Same with Hux and same with Captain Phasma.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things though where you're like, with like you almost, I almost was like, how are they ever going to defeat Snoke? And
yes,
and it almost seemed like maybe he was even manipulating the Emperor, you know, like because he just seemed like this like beyond anybody. He just knew it all,
mm-hmm.
and then he didn't.
Yeah, and I almost wouldn't wonder if he's going to pull a Darth Maul. And that's okay if I got cut away from the midsection. I find a way to have cybernetic legs, and I can survive because the Force will sustain me.
I don't know. I don't think
that. Here, that the difference shot is, of his tongue lolling out of his mouth. Yeah.
I know. I was kidding.
The difference is you showed his dead body.
Right. Exactly.
And that's why Phasma could come back. Because you never, like, if you never see a dead body, you never can be certain.
Well, she did fall out into space, and that armor, though, might protect her. I mean, the only reason we know that.
It's got a hole in it.
Yeah, it did. But Leia was able to, because the Force was able to save herself. Phasma didn't seem to have that connection to the Force. She just had some pretty good armor with a hole in it. So I think Phasma's pretty much dead into the vacuum of space out there with Admiral Ackbar.
But we don't know.
Yeah. It would be surprising if she came back. And boy, would she be ticked.
Yeah.
Because, I still feel like Phasma is the Boba Fett of this trilogy, where we expected so much and we got so little.
Yeah, I would agree. So I feel like the only way the last movie can end is that Kylo Ren and Rey die and bring true balance to the Force, right?
Nah. That would be terrible. I'd hate it for Rey to die. I like Rey.
Sure, but how else do you bring balance to the Force? She can't win. She can't win over Kylo Ren because then there'll be no balance.
Then the light side is more stronger than the dark. I don't know. That would be interesting because you do kind of have to deal with that now because, you know, we have that whole scene where Luke is showing us like, okay, so you feel this balance right here with the, so like you have death, but death is what brings forth life and you have the cycle thing. So I don't know. Maybe Rey has to win, but then the cycle has to begin again and eventually the dark side has to rise again and then the light has to come back. So, you know, it's the balance of good and evil. One exists to defeat the other, but the other one must exist in order for the other to really come up. It's like I had a philosophy teacher back a long time ago who's like, well, let's say we had a world where no evil things had ever happened. When somebody kills a child, would we have to have good in order to know what that's evil? And I said, well, what my answer was like, well, we might not have known or even had good, but now that we've seen evil, good happens when we go and prevent this from ever happening again. Good exists to stop evil.
Sometimes, yeah, mm-hmm. Not in real life all the time, but
yeah, sometimes it seems evil prevails. But
yeah.
But whenever we see evil in the world, good men take action to try to stop it. But only in movies are the battle. You know who the bad guys really are in a film. In life, sometimes it's really hard to know who the bad guy is. Sometimes you call someone the bad guy just because you disagree. You only know the bad guys when they show up and start killing multiple people. Those are clearly the bad guys. That's why I like, at least in movie, in fantasy, you definitely have that clear line. And that's, I think we need that escapism in a film like this. Because the only gray area is the Force being neutral. But the actions of the characters, we can tell, we know clearly who is the hero and who is the villain. Yeah.
That's the one thing. Star Wars, I think that Star Wars is talking about a very current situation that we're in. Star Wars is very like, is very anti old men, and I do think that again is why the people who aren't liking The Force Awakens, they don't know it necessarily, but the things that rub them the wrong way, it's because it's talking about giving everything over to the newer generation, that the old generation before you is the one screwing it up, and you're just and we're trying to take over and be in charge of the thing that they created, but really we should be creating our own new things. And that's what The Last Jedi is even trying to say and do. It's being a new Star Wars film. It's trying to do its own new thing. It's killing Snoke. It's killing Han. It's killing Luke. It's killing the old guard. It is burn it down. Don't let it exist. Don't like stop the cycle of hate and violence and tyranny. And even Kylo Ren. You can't say Kylo Ren's clearly the bad guy in this story. He's not even on board with the First Order. He is just a man using his means to get his goals.
Well, or is he not seeking to control the galaxy and rule it himself? He does now declare himself supreme leader. He is now the head of the First Order. He has clearly wants the rule and control. And that is one thing that's different between, like, the First Order. The First Order is we're bringing the old down because, all right, I'm going to get rid of Snoke and this is mine now. Yet in the Resistance, there's more of a passing of the torch. Like, okay, we've carried this long. It's your time now. But at the same time, we do see where Poe leads his little group, the younger group, and he goes against the establishment and messes everything up because he doesn't understand what the old establishment was doing. And, you know, it's not until Leia tries to explain to him, here's what's going on, and you weren't privy to this. So
I should have been, because I'm like the third in command.
Yeah, well, like, you know what I mean? He got, like, demoted, though, because this must mess up the cost lives. Yeah. So you've got a balance there between, you know, passing the torch and slowly bringing up a younger generation behind you, and the First Order's method of, you know, let's wipe out the old way and I'm bringing in my new order because this is the way I want it. So there is a little bit what you're talking about, but that's a little more the First Order way of destroying the old. While in the Resistance, we're seeing a passing of the torch. We're bringing up the new generation. We're teaching a new Jedi. I love that bit there at the end where Luke is like, I will not be the last Jedi. He did pass on some knowledge to Rey, and Rey is very powerful and learning even on her own, and apparently does seem to have those books. So there is a new generation. But yeah, there's a difference between passing the torch on and wanton destruction so I can rise to power for my own goals. And we do see a clear difference between a good and evil on how things are passed along. While Hera we're carrying the torch, we're passing the torch to a new generation, and I'm violently wiping out everything in front of me. There is a definite hero and villain.
I don't know. I think they've blended it a little bit more than that. I don't think you can say Kylo Ren, he doesn't even like kill his mom. You know? Like,
yeah, the hesitation was interesting.
And he isn't trying to be on his own. He, like, why would he want Rey around? He seems to be doing fine on his own. Like, why would you kill Snoke? Really? Really? Like, at the end of, like, why? For Rey?
What do you think? Rey loves company.
Yeah, because Snoke was in the way of his own goals. And Rey, though, joining, the way Rey could join with him, he felt like he'd be more powerful. And I think there is part of him that kind of cares about Rey and kind of maybe a little bit of a crush, a little bit of an attraction there. Because, you know, being more of that dark side, he can't give in to his passions. You know, he's not living the Jedi celibacy way. He's like, hey, she's not bad looking, and she's powerful. We could be stronger together than separate. But, you know, Snoke is in the way of my goal, so I can kill Snoke, and then I can rule the galaxy my own way. Although, who was it? I think it was my buddy Philip was talking about, you know, when Rey and Kylo Ren are pulling on the light and Luke's lightsaber, why didn't Rey just trigger the switch with the Force on the lightsaber? Because the pointy end was definitely toward Kylo, and then give the lightsaber a push right into Kylo Ren and finish the job.
Well, I think we already saw one really good lightsaber flicker on opportunity.
Yeah.
Very well placed one.
Yeah, but that is something I have to question. I was like, Rey, maybe just Rey hadn't thought of it. It's like, you know, all you had to do is turn that lightsaber on and it's pointed right at Kylo. You can end this thing right there. But, you know, she's young. She doesn't think it out. Right now she's just in the heat of moment. Like, I need to get the lightsaber before he gets it. And there was another lightsaber in the room that nobody remembered. Kylo Ren's lightsaber is still somewhere in the room. Why did nobody make a move for that?
Maybe because of the symbolism of Luke's lightsaber.
Maybe. Because Kylo Ren, we do know, really wanted Luke's lightsaber in The Force Awakens. Even tells Finn, that belongs to me. He really wanted it. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPcast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/neverlandpodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody! This is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yeah!
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.